Welcome to the Dirty Lie podcast, a podcast about facts, figures, and weird things from the past. I'm your host, Dez, and today I am here with...
KKK Kalakutaku.
I am here with Coach. This is the Submerge multiverse completed, I think, because I'm so happy to have you here today. And Coach is here from Canada.
Canada.
Where do you live?
I live in Toronto.
You live in Toronto?
Yeah.
My mom grew up in Canada before it was cool. And so growing up, I knew the Canadian national anthem. Felt super cool. I was like, I know three national anthems. You guys know one.
Nigeria, US.
Yeah. So today I have chosen Canadian history as the overarching theme for this episode.
This is so funny because, like, I just got my citizenship, I think, in December. My Canadian citizenship. And to get it, I had to do a citizenship test. Where you learn about Canada. I didn't read. I just did a ton of, like, past questions. That was my way of studying, and then kind of like figured out, okay, this is the right answer here and then blah, 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 blah. So I think I should be able to do this, but I'm probably going to be so mad at this.
So the thing is, like, I've actually chosen the most ridiculous story. It's not going to be like...
Okay, it could never have come from my citizenship test.
Yeah, like, because I was, like, looking at stories and I was like, oh, let me do, like, Japanese internment or whatever. But honestly, the vibes I am in right now in my life, yeah. I just need some light shit. Yeah, like, I don't want to deal with those things. Like,
fair enough, I hear that.
I feel like this podcast, I mean, I hope, maybe the people listening let me know, but I think I try and balance, like, super serious history with lighter stuff. And I think the past two episodes have been quite, like, you know, like, Igbo House of Violence, smuggling in Nigeria, and corruption. And I was like, I have the Kalakutaku pod right now, and why am I going to come and talk about the 20,000 Japanese people in Canada? I don't know, something. But
you're like, let's have fun.
I would say that one of this is serious-ish, but let's get into it. So you know how this goes. I give you three quote unquote facts and you have to figure out what's true.
Yeah.
And what's the dirty lie.
Yeah.
Do you know who Sir John MacDonald is?
Yes. A past prime minister?
The first,
yes.
Yeah.
That came up in my citizenship test, I think.
Oh, really?
At least in one of my past questions.
Okay. So, fact one. Sir John MacDonald was the first, I believe, the first prime minister of Canada. Was a known drunk. And that one is, he was a known drunk. And he was known for two significant drunk incidents. One, when he threw up on stage during a debate.
No.
And two, when he was in England fighting for, like, Canada's Confederacy and independence, whatever. And he got so drunk, he lit his hotel room on fire. So that's fact one, is that Canada's
first prime minister was a degenerate ass
drunk.
Yes. And publicly as well, because these things usually, because the first thing I thought about was Gej, but we never saw Gej. But we never saw Gej publicly. We were just rumors, you know what I'm saying? But this one, like, he was out and about in public.
Out and about.
Fair enough. But Gej is not drunk. It's rumors.
Allegedly. Do you know anyone in this administration that is allegedly a fish? There's two famous alleged fishermen.
I'm dying. Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
My people from the South. What can I say?
One of them is a man of infrastructure. He loves a flyover. That's the only way he can be high in government. He's like, I like the view from up here. Everyone should be able to experience this. And he just does flyover after flyover after flyover.
Factual. So that's your first.
Allegedly.
That's your first fact. Your second fact is about deals. You know what deals are?
Deals.
Deal.
Oh, like a door.
Door. Where people battle it out for whatever reason, yeah. Whether it's their reputation or a babe, yeah. Or it can be something petty.
Yeah.
I was watching Low-Key Relatable, I believe, podcast recently, mm-hmm. And Valerie was saying that she wishes, like, the guy who want to talk to her, they should just, like,
could duel it out.
Yeah, like, just go out there and fight. Like, she was like, she's tired of this modern thing. Like, men used to go to war.
I'm dying.
Men really used to go to war.
This is funny because I had a co-worker who, I think while we were co-workers, just before we were co-workers, she got married.
Mm.
And it was an arranged marriage. And I was just like very curious because that was my first one that I had known that was an arranged marriage. Because there are lots of arranged marriages in Lagos, man. Those are preordained. Like, and just asking her questions about it. And she was just like, yo, I really liked it. Like, I was listening to all my friends' horror stories about like dating and trying to meet the right guy. And my parents know this guy. He's cool. I've been talking to him for some time. We're getting married. And that's that.
That's. I'm honestly kind of, I would say that at this point in my life, I might be down for something arranged. Not even because I want to be married,
yeah.
But because I just don't want to date any. Like,
yeah.
I don't like it. I don't want to talk to you. I don't have a favorite color.
Yeah.
If you don't know my brother's name already, like, I don't even want to eat a meal with you. Like, where am I starting from? Like, I don't.
And I feel like that should be the next step in like online dating. It's like Amazon for like they just deliver you.
You my type on paper. No, like, yeah. I also think there's something. Okay, let me just say the fact.
Okay, sorry.
I do. So fact two is some French Canadians.
Yes,
Monsieur de Grand. I don't know. Monsieur de Grand, I can't pronounce it, and Monsieur Le Pic, this is in 1808.
Yeah.
And so they had a duo.
Yes.
But they didn't have a normal duo. They decided. So Monsieur Le Pic,
yeah,
was caught with Monsieur de Grand's mistress, not wife.
Yeah.
And Monsieur de Grand was real pissed and disgusted.
<That's jiffy. laughs>
And decided to do Le Pic. But Le Pic was a man of knowledge.
Yeah.
And believed that most of the reason people died from duels was not from the original impact, but from
the injuries.
Yeah. So not from the injuries getting infected due to like clothing or whatever getting stuck in it. So Le Pic showed up naked to the duel.
Yeah. And
De Grand was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, you know what?
I'm dying.
You can't have it. So that's fact.
His interest was not Le Pic. He lost interest quickly.
It's like when they say, if you want to fight with someone and they bring bottle on them, I feel like, you know what, bro? You can't have it. So that's fact two.
Yeah.
And fact three is that in the 1950s and 1960s,
mm-hmm,
the Canadian Army created a homosexuality test that they called the fruit machine.
Canadians are really good at like naming stuff.
Yes.
Quickly, just very quick fact. The, like, I guess gay village in Canada is like a whole street. Well, it's more than a street, but like there's a main street where like all the
gay bars,
but also like the zebra crossing is like the rainbow and stuff like that. It's called Church Street. Yeah.
Okay.
It's called Church Street. Like, it's just perfect, man.
Well, okay. So Some area of facts.
What'd you say?
I was like, I don't even know what this means. So the summary of your facts, which one is true, which one is a lie? One, that the first Prime Minister MacDonald was a colossal drunk.
Yeah.
Two, that Monsieur Lepic and Monsieur de Grand's duel was stopped because Lepic showed up butt naked. And three, that the Canadian military created a homosexuality test in the 60s that they called the Fruit Machine.
Damn. Fruit Machine sounds real as hell. It's just so Canadian. Like, it's just so fucking Canadian, man. It's just like, and they probably thought it was top secret, but like everyone fucking knew. It was like, first Google search, just like, oh, I'm looking for a juicer. Ah! It's like, check out this Canadian. This Canadian fruit machine. And then I feel like the very possible that the first Prime Minister of Canada would be drunk. Just cause like it's easy in that cold in Canada, it's easy to just like get caught up in your liquor. It's yeah. Cause in summer people are drinking because it's summer and they're out. And in winter people are drinking cause like it's depressing as fuck and like they're inside. It's so niggas are just always drinking, B. And then the naked duel. It's also very French Canadian. Like,
really?
Yes.
They like nudity.
They're just fucking dramatic. Extra. And they will still duel to this day. They're like, one of the prides of French Canada is how like European it looks. Like they're very tied to like their history and like all the.
And French people do love a mistress. You have,
yeah.
So you have to choose one. Which one is just like, something is off here. Which one's the lie? Did your prime minister set himself on fire? Did someone show up naked?
I feel like the prime minister one has to be a lie because of the specific examples. I'll say that's the lie.
Okay.
Those were just too like.
Too specific.
Not even just too specific. It's just like that. He did it twice.
Hmm.
Like, I can understand the first one happening, but for the second one to happen as well, just like, what was everyone looking at?
Well, I'm so happy that you got it wrong.
I'm dying.
You are following in the tradition of your fellow
Samaritans.
I'm just here to let you know that he did.
He did.
He did. In fact.
Throw up while in a debate.
Yes. And he did, in fact.
Set his hotel room on fire.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
to the point of burning himself.
Ah.
The lie was the...
machine.
No.
The fruit machine is real.
The fruit machine is real. In fact, there's like documentaries about how this fruit machine ruined people's lives. I won't get into the fruit. Which one do you want to start with? Should I get rid of the lie? Or should I start with the fruit machine?
So the lie is the duel.
The lie is the duel.
Yeah, talk to me about the lie. Let's get that out the way.
Okay. So first of all, this is just some French guys in Paris, actually. They're not French Canadian. Okay, yeah. And I mixed two duels together. There are so many duels for me to choose from.
Yeah.
But I chose this one due to the ridiculous nature of it.
Yeah.
So Monsieur de Grand and Monsieur Lepic, guys in 1808 Paris.
Yeah.
And like many duels, it was fought over a woman. So the woman was Mademoiselle Pirevite, and she was a famous French dancer, and she was de Grand's mistress.
Mm.
But she had been discovered in a compromising position with Lepic. And the two guys got into it and they decided to settle matters with a duel. Now, instead of settling matters with a normal duel, I guess these are some very, which in itself is very dramatic. But they decided that wasn't dramatic enough because they're French. So they decided they were going to duel in hot air balloons.
The fuck?
Yeah. So they met at a field.
What the hell is going on?
At the crack of dawn. And in a place called Tulares. And they each took a blunderbuss gun into their individual hot air balloons. The cords were cut at 9 o'clock. The men drifted into the air, keeping a distance of 80 yards away from each other at all times. Also, like, I just don't know how, Like, what? How do you drive a hot? I mean, obviously, people know how to drive a hot air balloon, but why is this a decision that was made? Anyways, they were like, we're going to keep 80.
The horses exist. Like, what's going on?
1808. Horses 100. Like, they could have done. Like, they kept like 80 yards away from each other. And then when they reached around 200 feet, Lake Peak, who's the guy who was caught in a compromising position, shot at DeGrand. But missed. Mm. DeGrand shot at DePeak and he hit. I'm sure the compromising position helped him hone in.
Focus.
And he shot at DePeak. He punctured his balloon and DePeak crashed into a rooftop. Ghosted. DeGrand landed safely 17 miles from Paris.
That is so stupid, honestly.
Yes.
Because hot air balloons are such large targets.
Yes.
How did he miss the first person? He tried to shoot him. He tried to actually shoot him as opposed to his balloon.
Maybe. Yeah. But that seems like a very dumb thing to do. Like, that actually seems like a very...
Maybe the other guy cheated. Maybe you're not allowed to... you're not allowed to shoot the balloon.
But he said, I'm leaving him with something. You know, I was like looking at all these different duels. A lot of them were over women. Some were like there's this president, I believe it's Andrew Jackson. He might have been the first president of America. Mm. And he got into a lot of duels over his wife.
Interesting.
Because there was like some type of mix up. He was her second husband.
Mm.
And I think there was like some type of mix up in her paperwork before, like, she was officially divorced and then when she married him or something. So people used to call her a bigamist.
Mm.
And he would be shooting at them like,
I'm dying.
But like, why is this a thing like you guys were doing?
What's
like,
a bigamist
is like, wait, let me Google, but I'm pretty sure it's like when you have two spouses at once.
Mm.
Let me Google this.
That's the first, I feel like that's the first time I've heard that word.
Yeah, a bigamist is someone who marries a person while being already legally married to someone else.
Fair enough, I hear that.
Yeah, so it's like...
It doesn't seem like such a deep insult.
Like that's like, what I'm thinking, like, but you know, this is like back in the day, woman's virtue, whatever. But I was like, why is that an insult that has y'all shooting each other up or pulling out swords?
Just like, yo, have you seen the federal government and how slow they are? They're so bureaucratic. My papers are probably on someone's desk.
Like...
Love wins.
Yeah, and there was like a guy who they asked him to choose the weapon and he chose sausages. But he didn't want to rack it out like sausage versus sausage. He said one would be poisoned and one would not. I was like, that's not a duel. That's Russian roulette. But like...
Yes. What? But I guess that's a fair way to do it, actually. Nothing's fairer than like... Yeah.
Eat a poison. So like, let's choose,
like, pick your sausage. Yeah. Okay. Pick your sausage.
Okay, so should we talk about your drunk Sir John A. Macdonald?
Yes.
The first prime minister who puked into the chair of the governor. The governor general's furniture. He threw up on stage during a public debate. And there were times where he went on benders and lasted for days, too drunk to show up for his official duties. And... on a winter night in London, right in the middle of final negotiations over the Confederation for Canada, his drunkenness nearly cost him his life.
Yeah.
So this was in 1866, and Canada was on the verge of becoming a nation. And all the biggest politicians from the Canadian colonies had already had two big Confederation conferences in Canada.
Yeah.
And they were getting down drunk. Apparently he showed up in Charleston. So the two were in Charleston and in Quebec City. I don't know how far those are away from each other, but I feel like those are probably English and French sides. Yeah. And in Charleston, Macdonald and his guys from Ontario and Quebec showed up with $13,000 worth of champagne, which is in 1866 money. So I'm sure this was a lot of shacks.
Like a TBS wedding, but everyone gets champagne.
Yeah. And he just used it, I guess, as like a way to get to know each other as they're like fighting for independence or whatever. Yeah. And at the end, like, it was effective. They got drunk and they agreed on a list of 72 resolutions.
Yeah.
And now they just had to turn that into a constitution and get that approved by the British Parliament.
Yeah.
So they headed off to England to, you know, get the approval by the British Parliament, and they continued posing.
Yeah.
So
this is by ship, I imagine.
Yes. So they get to London for the London conference. And
I'm so glad I didn't have to travel by ship. But I mean, the boats are much better right now, but damn.
Why, seasickness or just like the length?
I mean, the way it's portrayed in these like time period things, it feels very hectic. Like there's no real chilling. I guess that's why you're drunk, Sha, so that like you can just go through the motions, basically.
Yeah. So you know how it takes like a long time to travel by ship?
Yeah.
So so the thing is, the first batch of the Canadian delegates got to London in July.
Yeah.
MacDonald and his drunken crew didn't arrive till November.
No fucking way. Of course. Of course. Of course. That is so funny, man.
Bro, they have the first part of his document. Not his documentary, like a biography on him, talks about how like even in like their parliament or the house in Canada, he literally needs to like physically grip the desk.
Yeah.
To stand up. And for me, I find this to be a very powerful man. Like, do you know the type of power you must wield to be this inebriated this often?
Yeah.
And still be helping people get their independence and have a... Like, that is a very... What's the thing called when somebody's, like, a productive drunk or, like, productive cooking? Like, you know, what do they call them?
High-functioning.
High-functioning. Like, this is the definition.
Yeah.
This is the definition of a high-functioning drunk.
Fucky.
Bro, so he... doesn't get there until November. His mates got there in July.
Yeah.
Imagine having to wait from July to November on this drunk.
Yeah.
You're like that.
And guys probably knew what was up.
Yeah, but also like...
But then they also probably didn't.
Didn't, because you have to send letters. Like, yeah. Imagine like send... Like, I would be so like, what? Like, you also know the type of guy you're messing with. You're like, did he go on a bender or something? Like, did he die? Like, what is going on?
Because like, anything could have happened.
July to November is a long time. Sorry.
That's crazy. I'm surprised Canada got their fucking independence or whatever, because...
Bro, especially
like... should have just packed it up. Like, you want us to hand over the keys to this guy?
So, that's what I'm saying. Like, I find him to be very powerful.
Yeah.
In fact, like, I am highly impressed. When he got to London, what's the first thing he did?
He went to a brothel.
No, he went to a gentleman's club, which...
Ah, fair enough.
He went to the Athenaeum... Very close. He went to the Athenaeum Club, which still exists today. And it's right in the middle of the city in London. And many famous people have known to go there to get wasted, including Darwin, Dickens, Churchill, another famously high-functioning drunk.
Mm.
Kipling, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the Duke of Wellington, T.S. Eliot, Thomas Hardy, like super famous, rich, high class gentlemen went to the Athenaeum Club in London to get wasted. And MacDonald was a member of this club. So he went there because it was just down the block from where the conference was being held.
Yeah.
And it was across the road from Westminster Abbey. So... he spent his days there in a big room working out the details of Canada's Confederation and drinking. He was described by the British as the ruling genius and spokesman of the Canadians. he was seen as like a celebrity, sort of. Like, yeah, people thought he was very smart, very respected. Like, people would literally stop him.
I mean, fair enough, though. That shouldn't surprise me. Like, yeah. I mean, you don't get in that position by being a drunk alone.
Yes. Like, I honestly think, because, like, especially now that we look at alcoholism as a disease,
yeah,
and not just like a personal failing,
yeah,
it's very interesting to see how people were able to, like, because also sensibilities of that time, yeah, were just not how they are today.
Yeah.
Another thing about McDonald's, which
I also think that, like, it, till this day, yeah, I just think it's just very boys clubbish, where it's like, as far as you're delivering, boys will let you get away with anything.
True. Which is also a bad thing.
Yep.
Another reason I can't believe I came to this world, not only as a woman, but as a black woman in Nigeria.
Yeah.
I just don't know what I did in my last life. I would literally rather come back as a porcupine. I'm like, you know, like, if there was a choice to do this again.
Yeah.
No. I love Nigerian women, and like, I love being a Nigerian woman, but being a Nigerian woman in this society is sucky.
Yeah, I hear that.
So the thing about McDonald is that he was married to a woman who he like loved a lot, and she had died. Her name was Isabella, and she had died battling opium addiction.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like addicts usually do sometimes find each other. And also, that might be the type of thing that can propel you into an insane amount of drinking. Yeah. Your wife dying, mm-hmm, from illness, like, caused by, like, being addicted to opium.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, so he's also here, and, like, the other people are there with their spouses. Quite a few of them are there with their spouses. And he's here alone. He has a room by himself. And he had, so one of these days of going to the club, drinking, helping Canada become a confederation,
yeah,
he went home on a Wednesday night, and he was reading papers in bed, and he fell asleep, but passed out. He passed out.
Yeah.
He passed out, and he wakes up to the smell of his own burning flesh, because this is, again, 1800s.
Yeah.
He'd passed out reading a paper with a candle right next to, yeah, him. So the candle tipped over, set the room on fire, the curtains, the sheets, the blankets, the pillow underneath his head, the nightshirt he was wearing, all in flames.
This is so fucking hilarious, because maybe I just don't know enough Canadians. I just feel like not enough people know this story. Like, I need to go back to Canada and tell this story. This is going to be one of my bits, actually. Thank you so much, Adesola. You have no idea what you've done for me. I want to write a joke around this for sure. This makes no sense.
This was a few months before he became the first prime minister,
yeah,
of Canada. He was on fire.
That is so funny.
Sir George Etienne Cartier, who was another one of these guys on the conference, came from his room and came to his rescue. And the thing is, they hadn't always been guys. During the rebellions in Canada, they had actually fought each other. So, like, McDonald was standing guard for a loyalist militia in Kingston.
Yeah.
And Cartier was fighting with rebels in Quebec, and, like, they were at each other's necks. Yeah. But they had actually become allies, and then Cartier helped save McDonald's life. His room was just next door.
Nice.
And yeah. And the thing is, like, because Cartier was the leader of, like, French Canadians,
yeah,
and McDonald was the leader of, like, English Canadians. But that's crazy, man. That is a true story.
Yeah.
And he was actually, like, quite badly hurt, but not, like, extremely. His hair, his hands, and his forehead were burnt. And he had a really bad injury on his shoulder. Luckily for him, he had worn like a thick flannel shirt underneath his nightshirt, which caught on fire. And I mean, of that era, like after the burns, he also then caught an infection from the wounds. And he spent 8 days in bed, like hanging in the balance, but ultimately he survived. Months later, the bill was passed by the British Parliament. It was called the British North America Act. Mm-hmm. And on the 1st of July, 1867, the Dominion of Canada was officially born. Yeah. So
that's a great story. I really like that part of history. I should do more of this. Like looking for like the ridiculousness in these so-called heroes.
Yeah, I love this type of history also because, you know, sometimes you feel like there's this idea, especially of how we talk about history and teach history. There's this idea that people have to be like perfect or good or bad or like, you know what I'm saying? Like people can embody and encompass so many things of the human experience. Like, so MacDonald, I believe, remarries, I think, to somebody he even met in London. Suzanne Agnes Bernard, and his new wife would actually help him get sober.
Oh, nice.
So even though he had like other benders, she pretty much helped him get sober and helped him rule the country that he helped create. Like,
you know how you were just saying you don't have to be perfect? So if you were going to give two traits, like if you're going to be like, okay, or someone was going to be like, okay, we're going to create this like leader that's going to like, you know, revolutionize this country or whatever, but you can only give him two traits,
good or bad,
any which way. And it could be anything. And I'll give you my own and then you can give me yours. Just so you can
see.
There's two traits.
Can I give three?
Okay, you can give three. And mine is one, just like someone that's like fair. That makes sense. Someone that's fair. And someone that is effective is such a very, it's like a weird word because it can mean so many things. But I'll say someone that's an administrator, basically. So someone that's fair. And someone that's like an administrator, someone that like knows processes, like someone that like, you know, type shit.
Fair and an administrator. So my three characteristics, one is empathetic, because I feel like a lot of Nigerian leaders just do not give a shit. And they're so removed that you need somebody who's like kind of empathetic. So mine would be, one would be empathetic, two would be pragmatic. People just don't move with sense here. I mean, people who are acting with sense, who are being realistic, who are being, because you're dealing with, let me just say the three, empathetic, pragmatic, and intelligent. And I think I need all three working in cohesion. Because first, I need you to be pragmatic. I feel like people don't work with sense and realistic expectations, either because of ego or whatever the hell it is, or because of sentiment or because of religion, whatever it is, they're not being pragmatic. In ruling a Nigeria is a confederation of different states, cultures, tribes, personalities, belief systems. You need to be pragmatic. You need to be someone who can build bridges. You need to be somebody who can weigh interests.
I'm kidding.
No, Wike doesn't.
Because you said build bridges.
Don't kill me. No, but like, you need somebody who's like actually able to just be like, be balancing interests is so key. Because interests are always going to be in collision. And empathetic, because you just want somebody who cares. And I don't think it matters in every climb, but I think it matters in ours, where all these things like access to justice and like all this corruption, and it's bad. The last one is intelligence, because like all these bad people, not all these bad people, but a lot of the bad people or bad politicians, that people go online and call idiots, they are not idiots. They are willfully wicked. It is intentional action. No, it's not by mistake. They know what they're doing. If you think some of them, like some people are actually moronic and they just happen to happen to a position, some by chance, by brute force. But there's quite a few of them who are highly intelligent.
Yeah. And they be scheming.
They are scheming.
On the highest level.
They know how they're presenting themselves. They know who they are presenting themselves to. They know who they are talking to. Like, you cannot be a lazy intellectual and battle these people.
This is super random. And this isn't like the most intelligent thing either. But I heard this one story about how one day Dakwa Abiodun like showed up to his office in Ogun State. And he just gathered everyone and he's like, yo, you guys, I know how much you're making. Stop dressing like this. From tomorrow, everybody wear your best gowns. Like, we cannot be doing this in this office. Because, like, they were trying to form modest and be sharp and feel like, oh, yeah, we're not really getting access, blah, blah, blah. And like, bro, you guys are like, yo, you're not fooling anyone, man. Like, get the fuck out of here. I drip right now.
No, because there's also like, Nigerians love eye service.
Yeah.
That's like one of the worst things about working in a Nigerian office is how much Nigerians love looking busy, looking important, looking this. Everything is about perception until perception becomes reality.
Yeah.
And like, that's why our reality is shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say those are like my things. Like McDonald's, he'd made a legacy for himself that's incomparable to some people who are super duper that have never done anything in their lives. Like, I think an aspect of his life is that he's nigga set himself on fire. Literally. One of the things about this story that reminded me, I guess, of Nigeria is that he was in London for the Confederation, the London Conference, the Confederation. And I remember that when this guy, Toss Benson, went to London for Nigeria's like independence, you know, our own independence.
What's his name again, sorry?
Toss Benson.
Toss Benson. Yeah. He was Nigerian.
Yeah. Toss Benson is Nigerian. Yeah. He was part of the NCNC party in Nigeria. He was a parliamentarian. I think he was like our first minister for information or something. Well-known Nigerian politician-ish. Yeah. But when he went to London for our constitutional conference, he went there to chase babe. In particular, listeners of this podcast know, in particular, he went there to chase Folake Sholanke, who became the first female SAN in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And I believe a minister of the Western region. But he went there to chase her because he believed they were engaged. He had gotten engaged to Folake in absentia.
The hell?
Yeah, her dad... He had asked for her hand in marriage from her dad. Her dad said yes. She said no. She said I
am. No, she was unaware. She actually said no.
He said Z. And so they held a traditional engagement without
a Polaroid.
Yeah. And he went to go and meet her in London during the constitutional conference. And when
for
he got there.
For woman.
When he got there, she was like, not only am I not your wife, I have in fact married somebody else here. Like, I have a boo.
Yeah. Okay? I'm not a bigamist.
I in fact have a boo. And apparently he tried to... allegedly tried to physically remove her engagement ring from her hand.
That's unhinged as fuck.
And so she jumped out of a window.
What the fuck?
And they had this huge court case in England where her dad then comes. I'm sure, as you said, enters ship. Then comes and is a witness for Toss Benson, saying that he has paid dowry and therefore the Polar case invite his wife. Yeah, Toss Benson.
So what was the ruling? Do you happen to know?
He was found innocent. So because she like went to the police. And they charged him, I think, with like assault and theft because she said he took the ring and her watch or something like that. He was found innocent of all charges.
Well, he didn't have to marry. Like, she didn't have to marry him. Her marriage was still very much valid.
Yeah. And like, he basically said how he was going to like ruin her, da 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 da. She was like, lol. She married this guy who was a doctor, but then they were like students in London. She was also a student. She studied, you know, she does the whole log.
Yeah.
It's not above the inn or whatever. they come back to Nigeria. She's successful. Her husband is successful. Tos Benton is also successful and racks her until the day he dies. His brother was, what's his brother's name? Something Benson. No. A famous Nigerian musician who then writes this song to a diss track.
No way.
They write a diss track. You know the diss track.
Talk to me. What song is this?
If you marry taxi driver.
No way.
I don't
know. No fucking way. This is wonderful. I love this so much.
Yes. Because like Black Ashanka's husband is driving a taxi in London. Well, you know.
Yeah.
He's hustling student. Yeah. So he does this whole diss track. And when I tell you he racks her, like Tos Benson racks her, there's newspaper. I think he like does interviews and maybe City People or This Day or something. Like he's racking her forever. And when her husband dies, like OT 50 years later, he gets a band. He gets a band to come and play that he outlived. Maybe she went to get married one young small boy in London. That he still outlived him.
I am dying. Yo. I mean. I thought he was a loser before, but he won.
But imagine being the wife of the guy who's racking his ex.
Yeah,
his
yeah.
ex was never his ex yeah. from like 50 years ago. Like, bro, let it go.
That's insane. No, that's fucking insane. But that's a great record, though. Huh? That's a great song. That's history right there. What the fuck?
Yeah.
This is so twisted. Because, like, it just shows how unserious this whole... Like, again, it's one of the reasons why, like... I know we're in an era where we have bad leaders and all of that. I feel like we've always had, like, clowns like this. Or we've had efficient guys or whatever. But I just really like how it's all unraveling. And you can just, like, tell that, like, they... As much as these guys are intelligent as well and wicked and vindictive... There are also a lot of idiots, like, amongst them, and they make very, very ordinary and stupid-looking decisions. And it makes me happy. Makes me very happy.
I think, like, one thing you learn the more you look at history or politics today or in the past is that it's just made up of petty niggas.
Yeah.
Like, they're just people.
Yeah.
Who... get into positions of power. And like I always, like I was talking about this recently because we're hanging out and talking about some things that some uncles or aunties say or things that people now do like that you're like secondhand embarrassment or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just think about the clowns, you know, that have been clowns since secondary school.
Yeah.
Some of them have been in, on some bull since we were in primary school.
Yeah.
They are going to bond.
Yeah.
Some of them are already bond.
Yeah.
They are still clowns.
Yeah.
It's not going to change. Some of them are going to be very wealthy. Some of them are going to be very successful.
Yeah.
Some might be a governor somewhere or a senator somewhere or a head of industry somewhere. He's still going to be a clown. There are people who have been petty since the day they gave birth to them, whose pettiness comes over anything, no matter what happens. They are still going to be petty. The people who are backbiting. They don't, like, it's just personalities.
Yeah.
But the way we look at things or people, it kind of makes it weird. It's like looking at Gandhi, right?
Gandhi.
Yeah. And people talking about how like creepy he was with like girls or whatever.
Yeah.
But also like I remember being in school studying Gandhi and just learning that like the thing that radicalized him was going to South Africa and seeing that the British were treating the Indians as if they were the blacks. He was like, they're treating us as bad as these niggas.
That's insane.
He was like, he hated black people. Like, he was like, do you know what it is for them to treat us like we're black?
Yeah.
We're
Indian.
We need
to do something about
that. Like, I will not eat.
Yeah. I'm dying. I'm dead.
I will hunger strike my way into... Bro, he was so sick that they were treating him like a nigga that he stopped eating.
Is that how he got his thing? Is that like, I mean, yeah, he did a lot more than that, but...
He did a lot more than that. So like he goes to South Africa, I believe like as a lawyer or something. But you know, there's a huge Indian population in South Africa. Yeah. He goes to South Africa, he sees apartheid and he sees Indians being treated like nearly as bad as black people are. Yeah. Like black people, he's like, bro, we need to get away from these people. Like, they don't rate us. So he goes back to India, starts a movement. Yeah. He does a lot there. I'm really like
downplaying
it. Yeah. He does a lot. Because he also, Gandhi is also one of the people who teaches, what's it called? Something like non-violence, but because he does non-violence where obviously there's violent resistance, mm-hmm. but it's like but Gandhi's teachings of non-violence were taught. I studied it also as part of my degree in history, but it's one of the things that were taught to people in like SNCC, which is like the movement in America that was like the backbone for all this like MLK and all these things. Like, they're the ones who were teaching the students who would go and sit down at counters, or who would do the boycotts and whatever. It's like their actual non-violence tactics and how to like still be able to draw a message and draw a reaction, but also just not be violent yourself.
Yeah,
I think that's one thing about history, is that people just don't realize how, and it's due to the way it's taught, but things were intentionally
like
done.
How tactical.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I was like, thinking as well. Just, I was like, damn, this show is tactical.
It was tactical. Like, they would literally, like, it's not that, it's like sit-ins, for example, it's not like students just happen to just walk into a white restaurant and sit down there. No, because these people are going to pour hot coffee on you. Yeah. They're going to, like the racism was violent in very little, like, in every single way. Like, it's like when we learn about it retroactively, you're like, oh, there was a student sitting, like, they went and they sat at a counter that said white only.
Yeah.
And they, like, you know, you have all these pictures and stuff, but it's like, bro, imagine they're pouring hot coffee on you. Yeah. They're spitting on you. They're trying to pull you off the chair. They're trying to beat you up, but you're trying to maintain your protest for as long as possible.
Yeah.
They went through lessons. They taught them. They would choose the people who do this. Like, Rosa Parks was chosen.
Yeah.
And before she was chosen, they had already planned how they were going to do the boycott.
Yeah.
So they already knew who was going to, like, who was going to carpool, who was going to cook food. Like, they had structures.
Yeah.
Lots of the structures were church-based, which is why you have church leaders like MLK.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Like MLK Jr. like become these huge things because they're good orators.
Yeah.
Which MLK, I think, started practicing speech and oratory from when he was like 12.
Yeah.
Doing competitions and stuff like that. He goes to seminary school. They teach him oration.
Yeah.
He didn't just write a speech one day, right? It's like everything was done, it was tactically done.
Yeah.
It was planned for. They were sharing information, sharing knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, so sometimes like when I look, it's a disservice in how history and political movements are taught. Because when people talk about like NSAIDs and things like that, when they talk about like movement here, or Nigerians are not serious, it's actually true, we're not serious, but it's also because you actually need a lot of resources and time and concerted effort to make small changes.
Yeah.
Like, there are times in history.
And it's also, I just imagine that also in this climate, it's very scary it's easier to, I feel like, do it spontaneously, where like there's a movement that catches fire and like everyone's behind it and hopefully like it does something. Because there's a fear in like being caught conspiring, you know what I'm saying? Like putting guys together and mapping this and drawing it out, and then now like you have armed. It's not like no one's going to hear that, oh, we're planning multiple, I guess, like walks or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like, no, you're planning a movement on the federal government and
what's up, DSS? How you doing? Well, the way they would disappear you in Nigeria, there's an allegation that a certain member of Tinubu's team, who is not an elected member of office at this point in time, he's not an elected member of office.
Yeah.
He's a staff of the president.
Yeah.
Disappeared a journalist for two weeks. Now, when you live in that, like, so I understand why And also the issue is that in Nigeria, there's actually no rallying cause. I think anti-police brutality is the closest we're going to come to a cross-sectional rallying cause where socioeconomic, tribal, etc. background, everyone was like, you know what, our security services are doing the most. Yeah. I think that's the closest we can come for to a cross-national, because everything here is broken, is segmented. We're a very fragmented society, so we can't work it together. Anyways, wait, we have one more topic.
Yes.
Which is?
Church Street.
The fruit machine.
Yes.
Which is like the, I guess, the heavy topic of the day, but I don't really want to talk about any. The fruit machine was developed by a psychologist. So during, you have like the Cold War era in the 60s.
Yeah.
So there was like an incident where a Soviet spy basically like reveals that there's, you know, like the Soviet has spies in Canada, and it ends up with like 18 people being arrested. Like, he's just like, there's spies here. Like, you have like a defection kind of situation.
Yeah.
And in response to this, there was like a lot of fear that the Soviet, the Soviet spies everywhere. And they were like, do you know who is not trustworthy? Drunks, men with illegitimate children, and the gay. And so then they started putting thousands of dollars towards finding a machine for determining, or a test for determining how to root out these gay people. Now, they said they were trying to root out like people with behavioral sickness, so that they did not work in.
So what year is this?
This is the 1960s. This is not that long ago. Some of them, like, these people are still alive.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is not like, I mean, like 1960s is,
it's right there,
but it's also right there. I guess we're old. I was gonna say that was 40 years ago. No, it's 60 years ago.
Because I remember when like Nigeria was 40 years old. What year was that? 2000?
2000.
Yeah. I think. I know it was a big deal show. And I was alive for that, right? Yeah, I had to have been.
Yes. What?
I meant like I was active, not really like involved.
So because they were like, gay people would be liable, that they're not trustworthy, they're threats because Soviets can easily blackmail them, so they're a threat to national security.
Yeah.
And they also thought like being gay or being LGBT itself was an abnormality. They felt like they needed to weed out these people. So they got a Dr. Robert Wake of Carleton University to design a machine. And of course, he was sent to America to learn what the Americans were doing.
Oh, the Americans had their own machine.
No, the Americans had their own studies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they sent a psychologist. But then He didn't even get his test from a study of gay people in America. He got it from like a psychologist's test about what foods people respond to in
food.
Yes. The food people respond to in grocery store and how you can tell they like it. And it's basically down to a science that's not a science, which is pupil dilation, which is how much your pupils dilate when you see
something that piques your interest.
Yes. The issue with pupil dilation is that you have voluntary and involuntary dilation of your pupils, and your pupils dilate based off of how much light is coming into them. So if the light changes from picture to picture, your pupils are going to dilate. So it was not like a fixed sign.
Like if it goes from like, I don't know, a blackberry to like a yellow banana and your pupils get excited, they're fucking... banish you.
Yeah, so basically what they did is like they had this whole setup. They had like a chair that looked like a huge dentist chair. Yeah. They had like a polygraph test, and then they had this like machine. So like the fruit machine is like this whole test setup, right? So it's not just that pupil dilation thing.
Yeah.
They also have a sweat test to see how much you're sweating. And then like the big part, and then they have masculinity, femininity tests to see how masculine or feminine you are. And then they have your, this pupil dilation test, which is a, basically, they would show men like what they thought would arouse a man, which is just like pictures of like a caveman, like a half naked caveman.
I'm dying. And
pictures of a woman and see which one is dilating.
I am dying.
And like they would do the same to women, and they have like there's like a manual which is like detection of homosexuals.
This idiot.
And in the manual, it says that some homosexuals can be detected without difficulty by any sophisticated adult because of their mannerisms, dress, and their behavior. And they said many consistently are deceptive. The wife, in fact, is often a prime method of concealment. Oh. A very effective plan.
That is so funny.
They were like, if he's married, he's probably...
I'm dying! They said that is the final straw. That is the final straw. They said he rushed to the bar. Like, he's hiding something.
But
that is hilarious.
Crazy. But, I mean, the sad part about it is that, like, people lost their jobs. Yeah. They were rendered, like, unemployable. Some people were thrown in mental institutions, especially the women. Like, and just imagine one day being dragged from your office, thrown in the back of a car, hood, like, then taken somewhere and tested for hours and hours, and this happened for like weeks, and then somebody says, oh yeah, she's a gay, and then throws you in a
so it wasn't like they were running tests on everyone in the army or whatever. They were running tests
like the suspect.
They would suspect you and they would run a test. That is,
and it's not
wild.
Like just once, like it can be for like a period. And like people who talk about it said that they were treated as though they were prisoners of war. Like there was no presumption of like innocent. It's like a torture.
Yeah.
It's like a torturous experience, the anxiety inducing experience. And also some of them were actually thrown in mental institutions because, again, being seen as LGBT was being seen as being like a sickness.
So are you giving me my idea for blowing in Canada? I'm just going to do a Canadian Ridiculous Stories podcast with comedians, and just, this country is ridiculous.
Every country is, but yeah, Canada is also ridiculous.
That is insane.
There's some ridiculous stuff. There's some fun stuff there. There's some geography stuff, some history stuff. Yeah, I saw a few things when I decided to do Canada. But yeah, that's the fruit test. And that is those are your Canadian stories for today, I think.
Yeah.
McDonald, Fruity, and the Duel. I think there was a Canadian Duel I saw, actually. I don't know. I didn't use it because it just wasn't as interesting.
Yeah.
But it was like two Canadian politicians in 1819 who were feuding over funding for a public hospital. And so
that was a good cause, to be honest.
Yeah.
So one wanted it and one didn't want it.
Probably something like that. Like, yeah. I didn't really get into the details, but it was a Montreal doctor called William Caldwell who challenged a Lower Canada assemblyman called Michael O'Sullivan to a duel. And they shot each other five times before they were both too wounded to continue.
And,
do you know how pissed you have to be reloading their guns from back in the day? They shot at each other five times, and at one point they got too wounded to continue, and they were like,
did they survive?
Both survived. Yeah.
Should I split the money 50-50, man? Build two clinics instead.
Yeah. Canada has some funny...
That's hilarious, man.
Funny stuff. Though my favorite duo is non-Canadian, but it is one of my favorite duos. There's so many to choose from, but like I was reading all these lists of like funny duos, and there's one between this guy called François Fournier Salovies and General Pierre Dupont de Letang.
That's a great name.
Yeah. And they dueled from 1794 to 1813. They do...
As in, they'll just show up every time, shoot at each other,
no,
go home.
I'm going to tell you. I'm just going to let you know what was happening. So
that's a civil war, by the way.
Yeah, they had 19 years. It started in Strasbourg when Fournier had challenged and killed a young man called Bloom. And so Fournier had a duel with another random guy.
Yeah.
And then General Monroe was hosting a ball for the town, which is a different person. He was hosting a ball for the whole town. And he then told Pierre Dupont de la Tangue, he said, don't let that Fournier guy into my party.
Yeah.
I don't like his vibes.
Yeah.
And so Dupont didn't let Fournier in. And they were like, you know what? That's insulting. I challenge you to a duel. And then they said, bet. They fought three times in the following month, but they would only end up injuring each other every time because they were dueling.
Insanity.
They were dueling by sword.
Oh.
So Dupont refused to use pistols because he was a highly skilled swordsman, but so was Fournier.
Yeah.
And it was like they were a match, like made in heaven.
Yeah.
They were racked down.
19 years, that's a marriage.
Babe. They were. At some point, after continuously injuring each other, they then decided to draw up terms of racking. They drew up rules
of engagement for their marriage.
They were to meet every time they were within 100 miles.
I am dying. That is insanity.
If one of them was unable to travel, the other must go and meet them. Their only exceptions from meeting to duel were official military duties. So thus began one of the longest duels in history. After a while, they became quite friendly.
That is, of course.
And they would begin to exchange letters.
What the hell?
They would even exchange letters to offer sincere congratulations for promotions and other milestones that each other met in life.
I don't even know what to say. That is also very Canadian. It's very weird. No, trust me. Like, this makes so much sense. That's insane. That's a great story.
Do you know how it ended? Do you think they killed each other in the end?
I don't think they killed each other.
They didn't. But Dupont got married and he was like, I don't want my wife to be
a widow.
A widow. So let's end this once and for all. He actually decided that they could use pistols for the last battle.
Dying. And then did they use pistols?
They did. But
they still even did the last battle. Foolish guys.
They did.
Foolish guys. After they did. Like, why didn't
they were like just ultimate be like, climax.
Yes, like, these guys are guns insane. Out.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Dupont was victorious, and he spared Fournier's life, and the two parted ways forever. I think that might be a love story.
That might be
a marriage. I don't know. That is a romantic story
where like. I don't know, man. War is filling a void. Then friendship is filling a void. Then you find love. And then, you know.
Yeah.
Call it quits.
Yeah. So I feel like I've given you some Canadian stories for today.
Wow. Those were so good, man.
Thank you for joining me on the pod, Kyla Kuta Coach.
Thank you for having me, man. I can't wait to like tell this at the office when I'm back in. Did you guys know this and that? You're like, guy, we thought you went to Nigeria.
Are you coming back with some Canadian history? For everyone who doesn't know who Kyla Kuta Coach is, he is a member of Submarine and a Roach podcast.
Meow, meow, meow.
He is also a stand-up comedian.
Meow, meow, meow.
Very funny, very intelligent man. He is known as the funny, sexy voice, I would say, on Submarine and a Roach. That's your...
Thanks, I appreciate that.
I would say that's your bag right there. Yeah. It's your pocket. Thanks for joining me. The Submarine and a Roach live show was yesterday. Yeah. And we were absolutely excellent.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very funny on stage. And I, too, have the God-given gift to know when there's a dangerous moment. And I can tell you that my radar is always going off. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you have a lovely rest of your day. Bye.
Bye, everyone.